From newsounds.org, but not from the studios of WNYC, it's time for another remote edition of the Soundcheck podcast. I'm John Schaefer. Today, my guest is the singer, songwriter, violinist, guitarist, keyboardist, and arranger extraordinaire, Owen Pallett. Owen's first albums came out back in 2005-2006 under the name Final Fantasy, but since 2010, they've been using their birth name of Owen Pallett, while still working with a long list of other artists and bands, like Arcade Fire, The Mountain Goats, and The National. Pallett is also a composer. We actually presented one of their choral works at Merkin Hall last year on a New Sounds Live event. But today, Owen joins me from Toronto to play a song from the new album Island and some older songs, too. Here, with Paragon of Order, is Owen Pallett.
Okay, here we go. Rage up the street, a dog on a leash. Man try to corner me to get a piece. You don't need to ask, you got it wrong. Child of a broken one can love anyone. And the unblinking eye that keeps track of our shit, it will look to the left when kids get lit. My muscles softened since I washed up here, and I traded the south for a cig and a bottle of beer. In the hollow distance, a man tried to be kind. Facing the ocean, I silently whisper, in the hollow distance, a man tried to be kind. God killers alive. God killers alive. God killers alive. God killers alive. life.
The song's called Paragon of Order. That is Owen Pallett live at home in Toronto. You'll find that song on their new album called Island. And Owen, first of all, I like the new setup. That's an impressive amount of sound for one person in one room at home.
Yeah, I mean, I've done the live looping thing now for a long time.
Yeah.
But this new build that I have for my looping setup is... it's fairly recent, only maybe 3 years old, and it hasn't existed during an album cycle, so it's still kind of new.
Mm-hmm.
But it's both very complicated and very compact, which is nice because I just have a little pedal board that I take with me. But what it allows me to do is slide from scene to scene to scene and have my loops degrade and run through different effects and stuff like that. And everything can segue into each other. I'm really, really pleased with this new setup.
Yeah, it's really, it works really, obviously, very well for you. Let me ask you about the album that song is from, because Island kind of picks up a narrative thread that goes back a couple of records, and that is the character of Lewis returns in Island. And so... for folks who haven't followed that story over the years, maybe if you could just kind of set up who Lewis and Owen Pallett are in this kind of meta narrative that you've created.
Well, I mean, firstly, it's really important to me when I'm making kind of a narrative record like this that the narrative not need to be understood to appreciate the album.
Mm-hmm.
Heartland is basically was an album that was kind of investigating creativity and... one's relationship to it. And so in it, it's about a relationship between the creator of a world called Spectrum, whose name is Owen, and one of his creations within it, who's a young farmer named Lewis. And over the course of the record, Lewis kind of gains more and more sentience and intention and eventually kind of goes mad. It's highly inspired by Flann O'Brien's "At Swim Two Birds," where which I don't know if you're familiar
no,
with that book.
No.
It's great. It's kind of a book within a book within a book within a book. And in it, it's the protagonist in the sort of like primary narrative is writing a novel, and in the novel is a author who's writing a novel in which the characters become sentient and then. Seek to kind of take over the narrative. When I made Heartland, I thought I was making an unbelievably personal record. Like, I was nervous about how much I felt I was revealing. And it was actually kind of filled me with more confidence about this method of songwriting when I think people were just kind of taking it in face value and using this narrative and applying it to their own lives as listeners. So it didn't feel as much of a comment on myself as it was speaking to, ideally, if all goes well, a universal experience.
Sure.
And then what followed Heartland was the previous record was In Conflict from 2014.
Right.
And that record, I kind of had a different tack where I was writing highly personal songs where I was actually retelling things that had happened in my life as accurately as I could. And ironically, I felt that the record felt more fictional, felt more false.
Mm-hmm.
And it somehow felt less authentic than these kind of grand fantasy narratives that I was telling in the world of Spectrum. So, yeah, it was really, I started writing the songs for Island, and I wasn't actually certain it was going to be a Lewis narrative. And then it just struck me that, oh, this is going to really glue all this together. And then I revised and revised and revised and wrote some important plotty songs, and then the record existed.
So you mentioned this 2014 record, In Conflict, and the song you're going to do next for us, I'm Not Afraid, is from that record. It's, as with much of that record, as you were saying before, these are almost like, you know, ripped from the pages of your diary or whatever. But I've had this conversation with Laurie Anderson a couple of times over the years. You know how her songs sometimes seem wildly phantasmagorical, and then she has other songs that are really quotidian, kind of day-to-day details, very telling, very real. And it turns out that in her work, the phantasmagorical stuff is generally what has actually happened to her in her life. And it's the very kind of realistic stuff that she's making up. Does that kind of creative dichotomy, does that speak to you? Do you kind of find yourself working that way?
There's a journalist based in Toronto named Michael Barclay, and he once said, and it's always stuck with me, is that I've never met a dichotomy I didn't like. I also think of it, I think it's important, you know, that we really process the world as being gray areas and ambiguities instead of making concrete statements, because concrete statements always fail. They always break down. But yeah, I understand what you're talking about. I Am Not Afraid was interesting because it is a song about contemplating gender, specifically my own gender. And even though there are two characters in the song, there's me and then there is Z or they, it was really kind of me grappling with questions about my own assigned gender.
Right.
And what it meant and how to continue or not continue, you know, with maleness as my identity. But yeah, when I wrote it back then, I remember a journalist asked me if I was gender neutral, which in 2014 was actually far rarer. It's now quite quotidian. Just everyday gender neutrality everywhere you look. But I remember, and I felt very put on the spot because it was something that I'd always felt was more internal, that I was kind of like dealing with on a personal level rather than, you know, asking others to kind of grapple with. And how things have changed now with people being very upfront about their pronouns,
right,
to a point that it feels as if, you know, it is such an intrinsic part of specifically gender neutrality, is having that identity be projected outwards rather than reflected inwards. But yeah, I continue to kind of keep the specific details about, you know, my feelings about it internal. Mm-hmm.
Well, dichotomy may be great, but duality can be a trap. And the male-female duality is just one of many dualities that we've fallen into as a society that we're apparently working our way out of.
I feel like we're definitely, insofar as gender is concerned, for sure, having a massive upheaval. Yeah. And I think that things are going to be redefined on a weekly basis for quite some time.
Owen Pallett is my guest, and we're hearing him perform a trio of pieces actually from three different records. We began with something from the new album called Island. Let's now hear I'm Not Afraid from the 2014 album In Conflict. It's Owen Pallett live at home in Toronto.
Of the non-believer within me, no delight at the pain of my enemies, no tears for any friends I have lost. not alone, I said. It is a trial to keep my belief suspended. I'll leave my violin unattended in a cab or a restaurant. And then when they started to sing, nobody could have called them crazy. An open chord forever unchanging, a holy eternal throne. I'm gonna change my body in the light and the shadow of suspicion. I am no longer afraid. The truth doesn't terrify. Salvation is found in discipline, in discipline. I haven't had a smoke in years, but I will catch a drag if you are smoking. They told me to chew on a toothpick. They told me to take a deep breath. What is better is to punch a wall, to bin the boxes of your old love letters, to be impassive to the words that could save you, to need to see the world as ash. And I'm not at all afraid of children, but I don't know what good it would do me. I am no longer afraid. The truth doesn't terrify us, terrify. My salvation is found in discipline, in discipline. Thank you.
That's Owen Pallett, At Home in Toronto, and a performance of I Am Not Afraid, originally from their 2014 album In Conflict. The most recent album is Island, which has been long listed for the Polaris Prize. So congratulations on that, Owen.
Thank you very much.
I can't help but notice when, you know, we do these Zoom things, I'm always looking at, like, the books on the shelves behind people. And you have one of the books by my old friend Dan Levitin on your shelf. This is Your Brain on Music.
Yes.
Which, so is that, and also a book about Benjamin Britten, one of my all-time favorite composers who I think is massively underrated. I assume you're a fan.
I'm surprised that you were able to see it because of the way that this was angled, but yeah, I have a book on Britten. Britten's not my favorite. I'm somewhat critical of Britten, but also interested in him. I think my kind of fandom of him is a little bit more gay solidarity than anything else. But I do appreciate many of his works. You might see the book on Chopin. Chopin is really, that is my man.
Okay. All right.
Chopin is absolutely my hero.
What about, you know, some of the ideas in Dan Levitin's book, you know, This Is Your Brain on Music? What, you know, there's been so much kind of speculated about the creative process in music as a kind of, there are some people who claim it's a pathology, that there is something different about creative brains. And then there are other people who say that it's actually a response to difficulties and rewirings and stuff. Having a book like that on the shelf is the only reason I'm asking you this question, but, you know, it's, what's your take on that?
I've only existed inside one creative brain in this life, so I only really have one frame of reference, but the best explanation for how my brain works was in an article that I read about a study that had tracked the act of creativity as being neurologically very similar to manic episodes in bipolar people.
Yes.
And I myself am not bipolar, but I am being treated as if I am. My therapist describes me as being what she calls on the bipolar spectrum. And she, in her experience, has encountered people who our creative professionals oftentimes develop these symptoms. And it does, it's interesting because I don't have manic states, but I definitely have hypomanic states where, you know, I'm rather obsessively working on things. And of course, what follows is hypodepressive states. I myself just kind of see it as somewhat related to an imbalance. And I think this is also why there is such a prevalence of mental illness in so many creative professionals. It's just that, you know, it's like if you cannot keep these creative impulses in check, then, you know, then things can kind of get out of hand and you can develop a suicidality. But yeah, and I mean, this is also, too, why they caution professional creatives of getting too into lithium, because lithium, which is the best treatment for bipolar disorder that we know, is also just, you know, when you're taking it at levels to actually treat bipolar 2 or bipolar 1, it's a massive, massive inhibitor towards creative creative work.
Yeah.
So me, I microdose it. I just take very small doses, the same that is more increasingly being prescribed to inhibit against the development of Alzheimer's. Lithium's amazing. They've been finding that it's kind of like something that people should be taking in small doses every day.
Yeah. Well, I know you told me that you were doing the microdosing last time we spoke on stage at Merkin Hall. Is it the kind of thing where you can stay on a steady kind of level, or do you build up a tolerance and so you need to up it? I mean, without getting too pharmaceutical and personal about it.
I don't mind questions like these at all. I think when we were talking about microdosing, I was talking about psilocybin, which I had started doing. I know that psilocybin tends to, its efficacy tends to wear off. And lithium is different because it's I think my therapist told me that they had done studies where they were looking at hollows in West Virginia, where you would have these families who would essentially be very, very enclosed and almost like a hermetically sealed kind of social environment. And in each of these hollows, they everyone has their single water source. And mm-hmm. so they were finding that very healthy families with a low incidence of bipolar disorder, there was lithium in the water. Like it's just a mineral. And a naturally occurring mineral. And that the hollows that were filled with crazies, well, they weren't getting any lithium. So and that was kind of how they developed it. But yeah, it's something you can just kind of take at low doses. And they're moving towards it's one of those things where it's just like they're studying new things all the time. I mean, they're doing stuff with LSD now that they're figuring out uses for LSD that is really interesting. I'm pretty drug shy overall. It's kind of funny, like I smoke weed and that's really it. But all this stuff is really interesting to me, just because sometimes my mind does need some altering.
Right. And that actually, to come back to Dan Levitin's book, is part of what he is saying, is that music does have that ability to kind of alter your state of consciousness. What about for you as a creative person listening to someone else's music? Do you feel like, I mean, as you said before, you only have the one brain, the one experience, but does that kind of ring true to you? Is that your experience of hearing other people's music?
For pretty much the last 15 years, I've had a bit of a deficiency when it comes to listening to music. And that is that it no longer has a function of consumption and has more of a function of research. This is to say that, like, when I listen to a piece of music, I'm seldom appreciating it on an emotional level and am processing it on a technical level, which is sad because music used to be my favorite thing. And then as soon as I started, it became my job, it stopped being that way. It's only kind of recently, actually, that I've been able to really listen to records. And when a record does penetrate and does provide me with pleasure, which happens maybe once every 2 years, you know, most recently, Jim O'Rourke's new record, Shutting Down Here, just like really broke the bank.
Right. Well, that wall of sound will break through your wall of...
calcified neurons.
Yeah.
Calcified neurons that... you know, create this shell around my pleasure centers. Yeah, it certainly did break through.
Do you miss that? Do you miss that earlier kind of experience of music?
I've replaced it with other things.
Yeah.
I enjoy cooking a lot more now. I enjoy exercise in ways that I didn't in my early 20s. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, this final song you're going to do for us, The Dream of Wynne and Regine, is from your first record. So how have... you know, is this like a continual process of revisiting and recasting and reinventing for you?
Yeah, I mean, in the early stages of this solo project, which was once called Final Fantasy, in order to distinguish it from the guitar-based songs that I was making around that time as well, mm-hmm. It was very much centered around a kind of a party trick, which was the live looping.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a bit of an experiment in recording it, and... as a result, certain songs off of that first album from that early era, I really wanted to kind of develop them and have them be live staples because I never really felt like the recorded version lived up to what you know, the possibilities of doing it live. So this song in particular, I love the way that this turned out. I am now using a looper that can reverse the sound again, which I didn't have for a long time. And because of the way that I've wired up my pedal board, I can have the loops kind of dissolve into ambient gorgeousness and out again. And yeah, I'm just really stoked on it. I'm so happy with this performance.
Well, we'll hear it. This is The Dream of Wynne and Regine, of course, a reference to Wynne Butler and Regine, whose last name I can never pronounce.
Chassang.
From Arcade Fire. With whom you've worked over the years.
Yeah, this song was written in the very early stages of that band, pre-fame. And around that time, all these bands were kind of on equal footing. We were all just kind of like going to each other's shows. You know, it was very much a a thing that was mostly localized around the Toronto and Montreal music scenes, but also included Guelph and London and Brantford and and Ottawa. So there was just a moment in time when, you know, this giant Texan in Montreal had kind of brought this American ambition to, and intruded upon our mild Canadian sensibilities. And it was just like seeing like somebody who actually had the ambition to kind of like, you know, not just be a community oriented band, and to rather, it was quite intent in turning this into, you know, that this was his calling as a profession. And, but yeah, the song was kind of, is about expectation of an audience, and just my kind of feelings around that time of just seeing like a community kind of like get their back up that somebody would dare to come in and try and be ambitious.
Yeah. All right. Owen Pallett, the new album is called Island. It's a sprawling, ambitious effort. You know, there's certainly ambition both in the storytelling and in the orchestration. So glad to see that that's no longer a dirty word in your musical circles there, Owen.
I think it's the most ambitiously orchestrated record, period. Like, it is so ambitious. There's like, there are parts of that record that are like spread out more. There's more parts than a Ligeti score in some parts of that record. It's like the score, like it's got the smallest possible staves because it was just all so meticulously organized.
Yeah. Well, anyways, job well done. So congratulations on that. Owen Pallett's been talking with us and playing for us from his home in Toronto. And he's going to wrap things up with this live performance of This Is the Dream of Wynn and Regine.
The Prince of Buzz, can't wait until you, can't wait till you unsubscribe. I'll be a lonely scribe. But what if they like it and locks in a canopy with your accordion until we can, our love, we can get along. Can get along. Montreal might eat its young, but Montreal won't break us down. If we put our hearts in 20,000 tiny jars, they'd never leave their homes. We can get along. We can get along. Montreal might eat its young, but Montreal won't break us down.
Well, some people know how to make an entrance. Owen Pallett just showed us how to make an exit, even after you've been wrapped up in electric cables and are surrounded by gear. Check the videos at newsounds.org to see what I mean. That is an early song called This Is the Dream of Wynne and Regine, live, solo, at home in Toronto. And that wraps up this remote edition of the Soundcheck podcast. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. This music is from Owen Pallett's new album called Island.
And this nightmare I'm in, rush to my arms in the morning and meet me on the same platform. Angels and not this bullshit. I will burn every place that we enter, and I will burn.